Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever finished a book, maybe a novel or even a poem, and known it was brilliant, but, well, all you could really muster was the writing was just really good?
Yeah, that feeling of knowing something works, but not having the words for why it works.
Exactly. If that sounds familiar, then today's deep dive is going to be pretty game-changing, I think. We are cracking open Lewis Turco's encyclopedic guide, The Book of Literary Terms.
Right. And our mission today really is to give you that foundational toolkit, the language, the concepts, almost like X-ray vision for reading.
X-ray vision, I like that. Moving beyond just, I liked it or I didn't.
Precisely. Turco's work is kind of the ultimate antidote to that problem of, you know, intimidating critical terminology or terms people misuse all the time.
Oh.
So this deep dive is meant to be your shortcut, your direct route to understanding and actually being able to talk about precisely why a piece of writing succeeds or why it moves you or maybe, you know, why it fundamentally fails.
That sounds like a powerful promise, a toolkit
for
understanding. Okay, before we dissect the book itself, let's establish the authority here. Who was Lewis Turco? What gave him the expertise to build this kind of systematic resource? He lived 1934 to 2021.
Yeah, and he wasn't just some academic compiling definitions from, like, dusty old libraries.
Right.
His authority, it's really rooted deep in his dual identity. Turco was both a celebrated American poet and a respected scholar, a professor emeritus.
Okay, so he wasn't just teaching it. He was doing it. Building literature himself.
That's the key. As a practitioner, a poet, he had this intimate, really hands-on understanding of the craft. Rhythm, meter, imagery, narrative tension, the nuts and bolts.
So he knew the tools because he used them daily.
Exactly. For him, these literary terms weren't just, you know, academic abstractions floating around. They were the working tools of the trade. It's like, well, a musician needs to know the difference between a chord and an arpeggio, right?
Sure.
A writer needs to know connotation versus denotation, metaphor versus simile. He spent decades honing how to explain these things clearly for his students.
And he had that earlier book too, didn't he? The Book of Forms.
That's right. The Book of Forms, a handbook of poetics from way back in 1968. Hugely influential. It already showed his knack for codifying these complex structures, especially in poetry.
So this later volume, The Book of Literary Terms, it's like the necessary expansion of that practical project.
Yeah.
Cutting everything.
Pretty much. Taking that same practical how it works approach to, well, all of the major genres. Fiction, drama, nonfiction, the works.
So he really dedicated his life to figuring out the systematic, maybe not rules, but the framework, the logic of the literary universe, both for himself and for others.
You got it.
Okay, so let's dig into the book's core philosophy then. You said it's systematic. What's the central argument? Is it just a list of terms?
No, definitely not just a list. The big idea, the central argument, is that literature is a discipline. It has a logical, learnable framework, much like, say, music or architecture.
Right, you mentioned architecture before, so it demystifies it a bit. It's not just some magical inspiration falling from the sky.
Exactly. It's technique, it's craft, applied masterfully. And what makes the book so valuable, really revolutionary as a reference, is its structure. Its systematic, hierarchical structure.
Okay, hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
Not alphabetical. That's unusual for a reference book, isn't it?
Very. Most glossaries are just AZ. Turco deliberately refused that. He wanted to build understanding.
So instead of just looking up metaphor randomly, it takes you on a journey, building knowledge step by step. How does that actually help someone feeling overwhelmed by all these terms?
It creates context. That's the key. It reframes the whole exercise of learning these things. You start small at the microscopic level,
right. Like
the basic elements of language,
yeah. Sound
devices, diction, word choice. Then it logically builds upwards.
Okay. It's
the foundational narrative elements, plot, character, setting, things that apply almost everywhere. Then it expands into the major genres, fiction, drama, nonfiction. And only then, at the very end, does it culminate at the highest level, literary criticism, those scholarly lenses.
Huh. It's like learning chemistry, maybe.
Well,
you start with the atoms, then molecules, then compounds.
That's a great analogy. Exactly like that. You grasp the building blocks first.
I like that framework. It makes it feel less daunting, more like an empowering toolkit, like you said.
Yeah.
It suggests that if you learn the basic bits, you can actually start to analyze the really big, complex stuff.
Precisely. Which is why the audience is so broad. It could be a curious high school student, could be a PhD candidate, could be a novelist wanting to sharpen their craft. Anyone, really.
And it's descriptive, not prescriptive. It tells you what things are, not how you should write.
Absolutely crucial point. It provides context, history, function, examples. It empowers you, the reader, to analyze what a writer has achieved. It's not a rule book telling writers what they ought to do.
Okay, let's dive into that structure then. Get a feel for the specific toolkit. Part I, you said, is the foundational toolkit, the universal bedrock stuff.
Yep. Terms applicable across pretty much all genres. This is the basic vocabulary you need for what we call close reading.
So things like?
Well, diction, for starters.
Hmm.
Just the writer's specific word choice, and crucially, the connotation, the baggage those words carry. And of course, figurative language, metaphor, simile, symbolism.
Ways writers layer meaning onto things.
Exactly. The mechanisms for creating resonance and depth beyond just the literal.
And these foundational bits, they unlock the bigger structures, right? The universal colors of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
What are the absolute must-know terms there?
You absolutely have to get the mechanics of plot. You know, exposition, rising action, climax, falling action, resolution. The basic arc.
Yep.
Then the vocabulary for analyzing character. Being able to distinguish between, say, a flat character, one who's kind of simple, serves a specific purpose, and a round character who has complexity, contradictions, feels more real.
Okay, flat versus round. Got it.
And definitely point of view. Is it first person eye, third person limited, or that all-knowing third person omniscient narrator? And related to that, the unreliable narrator.
Ah, the narrator you can't quite trust.
Exactly. If you're reading a text where the narrator keeps saying, well, I think I remember seeing him do that, or their story changes, Turco gives you the term unreliable narrator, and suddenly you have a category, an analytical tool, to understand what the author is doing intentionally.
These aren't just labels, they're tools for analysis.
Okay. So building on those fundamentals, Turco then moves into parts 2 and 3. This is where genre comes in. He talks about it like a dynamic contract.
A contract. Between writer and reader.
Yeah, kind of. Genre sets up expectations.
Mm-hmm.
The writer can then choose to fulfill those expectations or play with them or deliberately subvert them for effect.
Okay, so let's talk fiction first. We move beyond just novel or short story, right?
Mm.
We start classifying them more specifically.
Precisely. The taxonomy of the novel itself provides instant context. Think about the Bildungsroman.
The coming of age story.
Right. That journey of growth, self-discovery, like David Copperfield or Jane Eyre, or think about the picaresque novel.
That's the one with the sort of roguish hero, episodic adventures.
Exactly, like Cervantes' Don Quixote, the classic example. Or even something like Huckleberry Finn has picaresque elements. Knowing these terms helps you see the tradition the author is working in or against.
So before, you might just say, a book felt kind of rambling.
Yeah, but now you might recognize, this is using a picaresque structure intentionally. It changes how you read it.
And that connects to specific techniques authors use within those genres.
Absolutely. Being able to identify something like stream of consciousness, you know, that flowing inner monologue style you see in James Joyce or Virginia Woolf.
Right, where you're inside the character's head, thoughts tumbling out.
Knowing that term instantly tells you something about the author's deliberate approach to time, perception, and interiority. It's a conscious choice with specific effects.
Okay, so that's fiction. Then, shifting to drama in part 3, the game changes, right? Because it's meant to be performed.
Totally changes. We move from page-bound narration to action and dialogue that has to work live, on a stage, in front of an audience.
And this is where Turco brings in the classics, Aristotle and all that.
He does. He revisits foundational forms, rooting his definitions, especially for tragedy, right back in Aristotle. So you get the proper vocabulary for discussing the tragic trajectory.
Like hamartia?
Yep, the tragic error or flaw. And hubris.
That excessive pride that often leads to the downfall.
Exactly. And catharsis, that purging or release of emotion, pity, and fear that the audience is supposed to experience.
Foundational concepts.
Absolutely. And he also covers the necessary theatrical conventions.
Hmm.
Things like the soliloquy.
Where a character speaks their thoughts aloud, alone on stage.
Right. Directly to the audience, revealing their inner state. Or the aside, that quick line spoken to the audience that other characters on stage supposedly don't hear.
Conventions that make the form work.
Tangible, repeatable techniques, not just random occurrences. They're part of the dramatic toolkit.
Okay, so we've got the foundations, we've got fiction, we've got drama. Then Turco moves on, parts 4 and V, to nonfiction and interpretation. Now, nonfiction, we sometimes think of it as just facts, information, but Turco treats it as an art form too.
He absolutely validates it as an artful form needing the same kind of critical attention. The key focus here shifts towards rhetoric and persuasion.
Ah, the art of argument.
Right. Whether someone is writing a persuasive essay, a political speech, a memoir, even a historical account, they are using rhetorical strategies. Turco highlights the classical appeals defined by Aristotle again.
Logos, pathos, ethos.
Exactly. Logos, the appeal to logic and reason.
Yeah.
Pathos, the appeal to emotion. And ethos, establishing the speaker's or writer's credibility and authority.
So this section gives you tools to analyze, say, how a memoir constructs its narrative voice, or how a political ad tries to sway you.
Precisely. You learn to see the artistry, the technique, behind the presentation of information or argument.
Now here's where, for me, it gets really interesting, the final section, literary criticism. If the whole book is about giving us clear definitions, a solid toolkit, why end by introducing all these competing theories, these different lenses, as you call them? Doesn't that just muddy the waters by saying there are multiple meanings?
But that's the capstone. It's the most sophisticated intellectual move in the book, I think. Turco shows you that mastering the mechanics of the text, the terms, the structures, is only step one.
Okay.
The multiplicity of meaning isn't mud, it's reality. A complex text can be interpreted in different ways, and these critical theories provide frameworks or lenses for doing that systematically.
So he introduces those contrasting schools of thought.
Yes. He lays them out clearly. For example, you learn about formalism or new criticism. Their whole deal is focusing purely on the text itself, its structure, its language, patterns, tensions, irony, independent of the author's life or the historical context. The text is a self-contained object.
Just the words on the page.
Pretty much. But then, right alongside that, he presents approaches that absolutely do prioritize context, like Marxist criticism.
Focusing on power, class struggle, economics.
Exactly. How does the text reflect or challenge the economic structures of its time? Or feminist criticism.
Looking at gender roles, patriarchal structures, representation.
Right. How are gender dynamics portrayed? Whose voices are heard? Whose are silenced? By showing you these different lenses, and there are others too, like psychoanalytic post-colonial Turco elevates you.
Elevates you how?
From just being someone who can spot a metaphor to being a conscious analyst. Someone aware that your interpretation, however well supported by the text, is shaped by the questions you're asking. It's one valid reading among potentially many.
Okay, that makes sense. It acknowledges the complexity at the highest level.
Yeah.
So looking back at the whole structure, the whole project, what are the core messages Turco is really driving home? What are the key themes underlying all these definitions?
I think the first big one is about demystification and empowerment, essentially. Literature is a craft, not just an art.
Taking away some of the mystical genius aspect.
Exactly. It shows that brilliance often comes from the masterful application of established tools and techniques. This connects to one of his core ideas, which you could paraphrase as, to name a literary device is to gain power over it.
Ah, making it tangible. Taking something that feels like magic in a great book.
And making it a concrete technique you can identify, understand, and maybe even use yourself. It gives you a handle on it.
Which leads directly to the second theme, I'd say. The power of a shared vocabulary.
Absolutely crucial. That shared vocabulary is what transforms your response from purely subjective opinion.
Like, I like the pacing.
Right. Into informed analysis. Now you can say, the author's use of short, fragmented sentences and frequent scene cuts creates a rapid, almost breathless pace that mirrors the protagonist's anxiety.
It's a huge shift in how you can discuss literature. Gives you credibility, precision.
It really does.
Yeah.
And that ties into a third major theme, which his whole structure reinforces, the interconnectedness of form and content.
Meaning how something is said is just as important as what is said.
Inseparable, really. Turco constantly shows that the stylistic choices, the diction, the rhythm, the sentence structure, the chosen genre, these aren't just decoration. They are the primary vehicles through which the meaning, the theme, is delivered.
Form is meaning, in a way.
That's a good way to put it. Which relates to another core idea, paraphrased again. Genre is not a prison for the writer, but a playground.
Meaning the conventions are just a starting point.
Exactly. A set of expectations to work with, react against, innovate within. It's a space for creativity, not a rigid box.
And that connects back to that final section on criticism, too, doesn't it? The idea about different lenses.
It does. The paraphrased idea there would be something like, a school of literary criticism is not a machine for producing the right answer, but a lens for asking a new set of questions.
I like that. It validates intellectual exploration, different ways of seeing. It's quite a sophisticated message for what looks like a straightforward reference book on the surface.
It really is. It teaches mastery at multiple levels. Know the tools, know the techniques, and know the different ways meaning can be constructed and interpreted.
Okay, so clearly this book is like an essential technical manual for anyone who wants to write seriously.
Yeah.
Fiction, poetry, even nonfiction.
Oh, definitely. A writer could use this constantly.
But for the listener tuning in, maybe someone who just loves reading and wants to understand better or wants to be a more discerning person in general, mm-hmm. What's the biggest, most transferable skill they get from digging into this material?
I think, without a doubt, it's the development of really specific critical thinking skills. Skills that are instantly transferable way beyond analyzing novels or poems. Because the rigorous practice of close reading a literary text, I mean, really paying meticulous attention to word choice, to tone, to underlying assumptions, to subtext, to ambiguity, that process is incredible training for navigating the world.
So you're training your brain to look beneath the surface, to analyze the construction of any message, not just react to its face value.
That's it, exactly. You learn to deconstruct an argument in a business meeting or a sales pitch. You can critically analyze the rhetoric in a news article or a political speech much more effectively.
You start seeing the techniques everywhere.
You really do. You become a far more discerning consumer of all kinds of media, all kinds of communication. You can spot when someone's leaning heavily on pathos, that emotional appeal.
Right, trying to make you feel something.
Maybe to distract from a weak logo, a lack of solid logic or evidence. Mm. Or you can assess someone's ethos, their credibility, how are they building it, is it legitimate? Those tools apply everywhere.
That makes a lot of sense. For me, I think the biggest takeaway, the thing I love most about what this book offers, is that paradigm shift you mentioned earlier, that X-ray vision.
Yeah.
Yeah. You stop just experiencing the story purely emotionally,
mm-hmm.
on the surface. You start to see the intricate skeleton beneath it. You recognize the choices the author made, the techniques they deployed. You see the gears turning.
And appreciating that structure, that craft, doesn't diminish the magic, does it?
Not at all.
Yeah.
If anything, it enhances it. You appreciate the artistry even more when you understand the skill involved.
I agree completely. And that lasting insight, that ability to see the structure within the story, that's really the genius of Turco's book, especially its organization. By arranging the terms hierarchically, not alphabetically.
So you turned a potentially overwhelming list
into a coherent, interconnected framework, a logical pathway. It's basically an initiation into the art of reading deeply, powerfully, and with real understanding. It gives you the keys to the kingdom, in a way.
A fantastic resource, well worth diving into. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.